instruction, the instructions for building the Mishkan, the shrine. And in it, our parasha begins as such. It says, "Is that you should?" And Yehovah spoke to Moshe, saying, "Tell the Israelite people to bring me gifts. You shall accept gifts for me from every person whose heart." This is an important term. Whose heart so moves him. And these are the gifts. They go on with the list of the gifts. And then on verse 8, it says, V'yasuli mikdash v'shechanti b'tocham. Make for me a mikdash. We'll see what that means. V'shechanti b'tocham, and I will dwell among them. So the traditional interpretation is that why is this grammatical error, if you will, right? If you're building a Mishkan, I will dwell in it. But it doesn't say dwell in it. It says, I will dwell amongst them, and of course, the traditional understanding is that the Migdash, indeed, even though it's a physical presence, basically where God dwells is within us, within our hearts, and the fact that people are able to get together do this is already a great, a wonderful, meritorious thing. So the Migdash, of course, is translated as temple. I'm not sure what temple means. So I like to give it a special place, and God always says. In the Torah, he doesn't say where it's going to be. This will travel with you. And eventually there will be a Mikdash in a place that I will choose, it says. That never says Jerusalem, etc., etc. People are often surprised that Jerusalem's not mentioned at all in the five books of Moshe. So what is this Mishkan? Well, the Mishkan is an indwelling place. It comes from the word Shekhinah, indwelling presence. It comes from the word Shechin, Shach Shachin, which is interesting, a neighbor. That you live with in a shchuna, in a neighborhood. It's kind of interesting. It's seen as something that's really brings people together, neighbors coming together, creating a neighborhood. So the Mishkan, of course, was going to be the place where the divine presence, the kavod, presence will descend, the anane kavod, the clouds of glory, will descend onto this tent. And when the tent has this cloud within it, then there's a possibility to enter into it, Moshe, particularly Moshe, and he will be able to establish that connection between the human and the divine. And of course, there's also a sacrificial cult that exists around this, and that's one of the essential purposes. Others say that the Mishkan is a way to extend the events at Mount Sinai into the everyday. And if you look at the structure of the Mishkan, some say if you move it up like this, from rather than this, you get the idea of ascending, if you will, and there are restrictions about getting to the holy holies, the way there were restrictions about going up on the mountain. Okay, so there's a wonderful song we sing, Yom Kippur. I'm going to try to bring it up here if I can find it. Not always easy to find things, but we'll find them. Called Bilavavi Mishkan Etna. I wanted to work with that this morning, and I'm just going to try to find it. Yeah, okay. Here it is, Bilavavi. Okay. That should do it. Let's take a look if it will. Get there, folks. Okay, here it is. And can everybody see that?
Yeah.
Pretty much?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'm not sure how to make it larger, so I'm not going to try. So this is something we sing before the Avodah service, which is at Yom Kippur afternoon in Musaf, which talks about recollections, if you will, of what the temple service was like and how Yom Kippur was like and when the temple stood. And of course, it's hard for us to relate to this in many ways, hard for me to relate to this because I'm not sure that the hope and aspirations of many who say at the end of the traditional Amidah, they say there will be a time when the temple will be rebuilt and there would be a restoration of the sacrificial cult. Now, we know from other sources that Rambam particularly, who says, well, this was just a compromise sacrifices, offerings, and that eventually they would grow out of that and not need them. So they would not be restored. But traditional Jews say, oh, some Mashiach will come, they'll build the Beit HaMikdash again. And it's very current now in Israeli political life and very scary, because there are people really who are now working vigorously to restore the sacrifices. This last Pesach, it was a ceremony of offering up a Pesach lamb. Hundreds of people gathered together for that. There are people who are building all of the instruments that were used in the Beit HaMikdash. They have clothing that the Kohanim wore, et cetera, et cetera. So it's something to keep an eye on. So what this wonderful poem, we're not sure really who wrote it. There are all kinds of attributions. Some say Rav Kook, others. But it says, B'levavi Mishkan Evne. I can sing it. You want me to sing it? You want us to sing or just read?
Yeah, sing, okay.
B'levavi Mishkan Evne Lahadar Kevo ולמשכן מזבח אשים לקרני אותו ולנר תמיד אקח לי את אש העקדה ולקורבן אקריב לו את נפשי היחידה. So this just says, I will build a tabernacle in my heart to glorify God's honor. I will place an altar in the tabernacle dedicated to God's divine rays of splendor. I love that term, rays of splendor. And for the eternal, constant flame, I will take upon myself the fire that fueled the binding of Isaac. And as a sacrifice, I will offer God my soul, my unique soul. So it's a way of seeing how we can internalize this and how what we offer up now in our lives is our individuality, our uniqueness, all that stuff that really makes us who we are. That little bit of, if you will, a little bit of that extra, you know, kind of add-on to the DNA structure that we all share. There's a little bit left. We say it's 99%. There's also a percent left that we fill in. We fill in, and that can be understood as the Nishan Shama. Here I thought it was very fascinating in this reading that basically, there's some things that we have to basically find the source of our flame as well. What is the source of our flame? Right? Here it's the fire of the Akedah, which is basically a problem because as far as we know from the text, there was no fire lit yet. Right, maybe after the Yitzchak rises from the altar, perhaps they're referring to the ram that was offered up in his stead. So I've been reading a lot about temples and mishkans and everywhere, and every tradition we know has some sort of temple, some sort of mikdash, which basically tries to bring you into a place that you've not been before. Or if you've been before, you've not seen it perhaps, and you see it anew every time you're there. To see things anew every time you're there is, of course, one of the ways we attach this to our practice. I find that when I sit, as I sat this morning, all of a sudden some new thing emerged. You know, it was not like the breath that I had yesterday. It was today's breath. I couldn't save that breath. I would have saved it in a bottle, but I couldn't. So I had to breathe again. To breathe newly again, if that's possible to say. So this building of an internal, if you will, special place, a mishkan, a place that it takes our full selves to build, is something that we don't build quickly. And we don't necessarily need that physical place if we can internalize it. Another tradition which is worth noting is, why does this interrupt our narrative? Right, we just had the whole story of the Sinai event and the Mishpatim, the laws, the sort of covenant collection they call it, and then all of a sudden they're interrupted by two parashiyot, and we'll come back to our narrative in Ki Tisa, which we'll talk about Moshe coming down to the mountain, the golden calf, and all of those stories that we know. And the reason given by some traditional commentaries is that we, before the golden calf is built, we have to know how to remedy that need that people have for something tangible, particularly when we claim that the divine is beyond us. We can never comprehend it. People need tangibility. So the Mishkan is talked about now to basically let you know when the golden calf happens, you know, there is a way of preventing that kind of idolatry. Okay. So they use the term, God sends the trufa, the drug, before. So, in a sense, having the instructions for the Mishkan can center us and offer tangibility. What else I like about the Mishkan is that it's a free will offering. People are not required. Last week we had Shabbat Shkalim. Everybody wanted ownership. You were required to give a half a shekel, not more and not less. And that made you, quote unquote, a ongoing member of the community. Right? There's sliding scale now and beyond that. Now people can bring a lot, can bring a little materials. I don't want to get into the idea, the whole point of whether the Mishkan actually existed, or is this a retrojection from the temple that Solomon built back to show that it's really from the very beginning of the formation of the Israelite people. But how do you do this eternally? It's not easy. How do you build a structure when you know that everything is passing? Why would you build a structure where everything is passing? And some would say, and I sort of agree with this, is that we build a structure in our lives because we know that everything is fleeting and everything is passing. But we need that structure to give us, if you will, the background, if you will, for our going past it. It's a kind of an interesting thing. It becomes like a grounding that says, okay, now that I have that grounding, I can appreciate the fact that we are always passing by it and coming back, always passing by it, like our breath, passing by it and coming back. So that's why I love this poem that we read at Shul in Yom Kippur, because it says, yes, that's true. You can establish that kind of grounding within yourself, but you have to basically become aware. Like that term, become aware of the fact that it is an internal structure you're making in order to ground you, and then you can understand whether or not then you can feel the impermanence of our own lives vis-a-vis this structure. Historically speaking, unfortunately, the Mishkan and later the Beit HaMikdash indeed were impermanent. I mean, this is something I always wonder about. That structure, that institution ultimately gets dissipated. Often Bobby and Sheila and I, when we teach at the Tikkun, we talk about the breakdown of structure and how we have dealt with the breakdown of structure, not by becoming debilitated, but using that impermanence to understand that things flow and things will eventually, if you will, get to another place. And when it gets to the other place, whether we'll build a physical Mishkan, I don't think so, but we will try to continue to build what you see here in Bilavavi. So our capacity to apprehend that we are people who need structure in our lives, and yet we are impermanent and everything is fleeting, is a lovely contradiction that I think we can hold both of them in our minds at the same time. Most people can't hold anything besides one idea in their mind at any given time. But hopefully through our practice, we understand that there are so many different thoughts that we let go by, so many different ideas, so many different, if you will, declarations of our fealty to one or two or three ideologies. But we all always have the capacity to pick the energetic force, which is what it means to have the fire, and offer up that, in that energetic field, that's created by fire, that we offer up the capacity to offer our true selves, our better selves. I like that as well. To offer our nafshi yechida, our unique souls. So I didn't want to, go on too much, because I'd love to get your feedback on this. And if there are any cool questions, I'll be glad to answer them as well. So I know...
I can't hear.
Yeah, I think Moshe is frozen. That's why.
Okay, we'll wait. Maybe if we get rid of this screen share, the relay has to stop it,
Moshe,
I think.
Has to do it, yeah.
But yeah, he'd have to stop. Or want to send him a separate text. Maybe he doesn't realize he's...
Bobby, can you text? Oh, he just left. He'll be back.
I'm sure he'll reconnect.
Yeah. Sure.